Hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, do you know what I hate?
What do you hate?
I hate big book.
The Bible?
Well, I mean, okay, I hate big books, I guess. Is that what we... Like, I hate the concept of mega conglomerate corporations taking out the mom and pa places in quaint Upper East Side New York.
Yes, that's the thing we all feel.
Yes. Anyway, we watched You've Got Mail.
I grabbed my britches and a long cane pole, headed for the red hot catfish hole.
Catfish!
Catfish boogie, do it, maybe with me.
You've Got Mail. I saw when she was signing on that she was getting 31-something K baud when she was signing up. I was like, Ooh. Hey, it's pretty kick-ass.
Nice. Yeah, this movie is dated, coming out in 1998. It was dated in a way that I found very comforting. Like when the internet was new and full of promise.
Yeah.
What it could be versus what it is now.
The quaintness. So this movie, and we're going to have to touch on this as we go along, but this movie made me sad in one like very specific way. And obviously there's going to be all the stuff we're going to, because spoiler alert, ladies and gentlemen, I think there's going to be a fair amount of Alex talking about how sad he is that he's alone and is always going to be alone. That's just going to happen. It's going to happen any romantic movie. So let's just put that on the table.
Halfway through, I was like, oh, yeah, this is why we don't watch these movies.
Yeah, because let's put it on the table now. I'm very lonely. Why will no one love me? I'm not kidding. I'm literally putting out a call for help and no one's listening. Moving
that's
on.
A great bit.
I'm a living joke. So the thing that made me kind of, not sad, but like, is winsome a word? Is that the word I'm thinking of?
I don't know. I need the context you're trying to use it in.
I'm like wistfully longing for a time before now where the world had a different kind of promise than what the future became. Like, this was New York when it still was kind of New York. And I'm not doing that stupid, I'm from the East Coast. New York used to be, hey, it's New York, and now it's all yuppies. But like, it still had, like, you could still make fun of Brooklyn, like they do in one scene of this movie.
Yes.
This was the idea that, like, the internet was still, like, the internet hasn't changed in, what, a decade? I mean, yeah, it's changed, but it's basically, it's the same speed or whatever. Like, it's just, it's the same bullshit, just slightly glossier. That was, you know, they were still looking forward to 56K.
Mm-hmm.
You know, T1 lines were these dream entities. They just... The future was much brighter than what it's. I think I'm just sad for what happened. And this movie had this kind of the promise of America was still there. Like this pre 9/11, pre internet, pre Trump, pre everybody hates each other, awful politicized world. And it made me. Yeah, winsome's not a word. I don't know what the word I'm searching for, but there's a word for that kind of like longingly looking back.
Yeah,
and
wistful.
I think there's a better word for it, but like me, no big words, not no good.
Sure. Yeah, well, I see what you
no
mean.
No, like sesquipedalian am I.
when the movie starts and you get this computer animated thing of going into like the internet basically and like flying through a digitized New York that. Looks like something that like Marvel would use for pre-visualization now. But at that time, you know, it's like, wow, my God, look at this computer graphics in this movie. I mean, this was not that far off from the Matrix and stuff like that. So it's not like this was the best it could possibly be. But still, it was just like, look at this. Isn't this pretty cool? And that made me kind of happy. But I know what you mean. I think like this movie makes you want to put on the rose-colored glasses of boy, things were better. In a lot of ways, they were, but, you know, in a lot of ways, things were still terrible. But I like this movie as a kind of representative of that, of, like, this idea of what the internet could be, in that she is this character, Kathleen Kelly, is falling in love with this person she met online, this unseen person, and it just seems, like, amazing and wonderful and all that. And then he ends up being, like, a corporate stooge. Who manipulates her, and it's like, yeah, that's the internet. It's like, well, oh man.
There's also the just to be clear, because I'm going to hear this is going to be one of those episodes that people are going to talk to me about. I think I'm not looking back in 1998 saying 1998 was better.
No,
saying what we could have pictured the future as being.
Mm-hmm.
was better in 1998. Like right now, I'm less positive about the future than what I could have been in 1998. Because now it's like, yeah, we already, like, I think I know what 60 years from now is going to look like. You know, it's just going to be more of the same shit.
Raining ash, fiery hellscape. I will have a throne of skulls.
And the other thing that's kind of novel is, so I was a big AOL person. I love chat rooms and all that shit. That was like, boy, that was exactly what I was doing back then. But what's so great about her is she is, you know, she's one of the most attractive people that's like ever lived. I mean, she's just this very, very attractive woman. She's so pretty. Pretty is probably a better word. Very pretty. But she, at no point in this movie is she like being like, oh man, this guy sent me like 30 unsolicited like text ASCII dicks.
Yeah.
You know, like she's like the idea of unsolicited dick pics don't exist yet. Like it's such a it's like the halcyon days of youth.
Yeah, like it's, oh my god, this older lady is talking about having cyber sex. Isn't that kind of wacky? Rather than just being like, yeah, no, I have an OnlyFans.
Oh yeah, so speaking of the old lady talking about having cyber sex, is this pre or post old lady rapping?
I think post or maybe in the midst of. But I mean, like, okay. Old lady rapping has been with us for time immemorial. We just only noticed it.
Because I feel like that's like a sister to old lady rapping is old lady talking about modern sex stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now, it would be an old lady going like, oh yeah, I only did anal before I was married to save my virginity. You know, like that whole Christian thing.
It's like Meg Ryan is no stranger to that when, you know, the When Harry Met Sally, I'll have what she's having thing.
Yeah. So speaking of that.
Old ladies are horny, what we're saying.
Hmm? Old ladies. Yeah. Old ladies be. That's the highest rate of STDs in the country is old people homes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And coronavirus, you know. Yeah. R.I.P. So I started to watch this movie and I realized that I've seen this movie before and I really liked it. And then watching it further, I realized I had gotten this confused with When Harry Met Sally, which I don't think I've seen. Because I think it's like the same movie, right?
Wait a minute. I need to unpack that. So you thought you saw this before.
See, no. I was sure that I'd seen When Harry Met Sally.
Okay.
And I was sure I had not seen You've Got Mail.
Uh-huh.
Then I started watching this and went, oh, no, I've seen this movie. And then made me rethink my stance on when Harry Met Sally, which I'm pretty sure I've never seen.
Okay.
So basically, I'm saying I had a false memory. I had like two false memories, one of not seeing one movie and one of seeing the other, because essentially it's Meg Ryan and some schlubby guy falling in love.
So in reality, you've seen none of these?
I've seen this one twice and I've never seen When Harry Met Sally.
That's where I was getting lost because I didn't understand.
And I may have seen Sleepless in Seattle.
Okay. That could very well be. There's no
way.
Do
they meet on a roof with like there's some kind of like a dinner on a roof scene?
No idea. Never seen it.
All right. I'm going to say that's that one.
Okay.
So I'm not really familiar with the career of Meg Ryan.
Well, I mean, she and Tom Hanks were a magical duo with this. I mean, Sleepless in Seattle, with which this is sort of a spiritual sequel to. Nora Ephron, the creator, the director and writer, basically referred to it as a sequel. But then they were also great together in Joe versus the Volcano.
That I've seen. I like that
movie. Meg Ryan is amazing in that. I hadn't seen that probably since I was a teenager, and I got to see it a year or two ago. And like she plays like three different characters, and she's phenomenal in every role. And she's really
great. I just remember, wouldn't he have a brain cloud? Is that
brain
what they told
cloud,
him he had?
Yeah.
Yeah, brain cloud is such a great disease name.
Mm-hmm.
So this movie opens with Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks writing each other. They're pen pals on the America Online AOL internet service. And she owns a bookshop in New York City. And so basically, she has the best life I could have imagined when I was 7.
Right.
Like, she wears, like, cute outfits. She lives in New York. She owns a bookshop.
Talking to Tom Hanks.
The other thing about that life, she has people in her payroll. So she's living, she lives in the most expensive part of Manhattan. She has a shop in the expensive part of Manhattan, and she can afford a part-time worker that can also afford an apartment in Manhattan on part-time working prices while going to school.
Yes. Well, they, yeah.
What the? I mean, is this that Friends logic? We're just like, ah, I don't know, they're white, they can afford it somehow.
Basically, I mean, they kind of reference that with Steve Zahn's character making a comment about rent control and how little he pays.
Oh, yeah.
And whatever. But yeah, it's just, yeah, she's doing fine. I mean, like almost everybody in a romantic comedy, you're generally doing pretty good.
Yeah, but like not Manhattan good. I mean, that's yeah, it's a lot of money. That's fucking yeah, big cash right there.
That. I'm just a hunk from the Midwest. I don't know that stuff.
You forgot two words in that sentence.
Sexy.
One's of hunk of
sex. Hunk. Ugh.
You know, I don't know why. I literally
carve out a big hunk of sex.
The end. For some reason, I wanted to say Stilton, like the cheese.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just decided
that the crappy ass cheese. The appropriate thing to craft single.
I think it's isn't there somewhere in the middle of the country that's known for cheese? I know that's not where you're from.
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin is known for cheese. I think that's why that got in my head. Sorry, I'm a New York elitist.
Right. Like, I don't know, like, people have made comments about Nora Ephron's work in general and her sort of representation of New York. And it's the sort of it's a stereotype now, but, you know, oh, New York's its own character in the movie. But I kind of didn't really feel that in this. It just sort of felt like a city.
Yeah. You know? The thing that felt New York to me is a lot of the characters felt New York-y, like, especially the Gene Triplehorn character. Is that her name? Stapleton.
Gene Stapleton. Yes. Birdie.
Stapleton. Yeah, she feels like just an old lady from New York.
Mm-hmm. No, the people in line at the grocery store, that felt. That
oh yeah,
felt,
yeah, totally. Yeah,
that felt like what I imagined New York was like.
Yeah, no, it reminded me of living on that coast, and not in like a romanticized. It's like there's a certain kind of like his girlfriend, Tom Hanks' girlfriend, in the beginning is very New York, like that kind of intellectual shithead.
Mm-hmm.
And like, because I just want to say, I'm not just meeting romantic New York. Like, there's also the New York. I mean, there's a reason I left that area. Like, and there's a lot of people like his girlfriend from the beginning of just that, like, yeah, that snooty, boring lady.
But yeah, Parker Posey playing a character not unlike her character in Best in Show, but just a high strung, waspy New York person.
Oh, the other thing was funny about this, and it's kind of. It's interesting now because we've gone one more step past that. But like, it's funny to see the dealing with Big Book knocking out all the mom and pop bookshops.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's, you know, they're, you know, I don't know what, 4 or 5 years away from Amazon starting to sell books. Mm-hmm. I don't know when they actually start to sell books, but like it's soon. But they don't know the kind of the menace that's kind of coming from the other side of the mountains. Like, you know, the horde that's about to attack them.
Yeah.
And it's just it's almost quaint to worry about that. But now we're like even beyond like Amazon being a book monopoly. Now they're an everything monopoly. So it's like this is two generations away from our current worries, this 1998 film.
It's like the Sumerians in the Bronze Age being like, hey, this is as good as it's going to get. We will rule forever. And then,
oh, yeah,
Will they know gold's around the corner or iron or whatever.
Oh, you know what the most 90s thing about this movie? Greg Kinnear's in it.
Oh.
There is nothing more 90s than a Greg Kinnear appearance.
Yeah.
And he's actually pretty good at it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he's not bad. His character, they do a good job with both his character as Meg Ryan's boyfriend and Parker Posey as Tom Hanks's, where like, while Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan are having this sort of illicit romance, this growing romance, like you can see that like, yeah, these people are nice enough, but I can also see why you don't like them. Probably more so with him than Parker Posey, but they spend a little bit more time with him, I think. But I thought that it did a decent job of not just like making these people seem like an actual real relationships.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think they slow played it enough because this movie it dances the line well where it opens with, I mean, it's not infidelity, but it's emotional cheating. Yeah. Yeah. And
I watched Dr. Phil.
That can, I don't know. I think that could have spoiled the characters for us if they didn't do it as delicately as they did.
Yeah.
And like the timing of the breakup really not having much to do with it's not like they broke out to try to bang, you know, New York 252 or whatever, and, you know, Shop Girl.
Right.
It's, you know, they didn't break up to be with each other. They broke up because of the awareness that that relationship brought to the world. And I just, it was well played. And I assume that comes from the source material. This is from like some like 1920s book, I think.
Yeah, it was a play, I believe, called like Parfum or something. And then it was made into a movie called The Shop Around the Corner, which is what her shop is named in deference to that. As a reference.
Yeah. Shop Around the Corner, by the way, great name for a shop. Big fan of it.
Particularly one around a corner.
I want it on in a long stretch. You know, like that highway in Australia they can drive on for like 2 days? I want it like one day in the middle of that. And I'll open up a quaint little shop that's called Shop Around the Corner. And you don't offer water. Yeah. No water, no car parts, no nothing. It's just like kitschy books.
Yeah. We put googly eyes on a rock.
Yeah, I'm so bored. but yeah, if I ever win a lottery or my cryptocurrency holdings, you know, come to fruition as I think they're going to, I would like to open a bookshop. And I know that it would go out of business, which is why I'm saying I need to like win a lot of money. I just want like a place to hang out and be like cool and quirky.
Yeah, there was a place in Omaha called the Antiquarian, and it was like the upstairs was a bookshop, the downstairs was a record store. And it was always like the hip people bought their cool records there, and I was not that. But I didn't appreciate it enough when I was there, but I always loved that like the bookstore up top was like a mess. It always just seemed like stuff was kind of just shoved places, and the owner and his buddies would like sit around all day, smoke, and talk about like laissez-faire politics.
And yes.
That was kind of awesome to me. Like, that would be a great thing. Just, yeah, I got all these books everywhere and I'm just going to hang out and shoot the shit all day.
Oh, there's the other 90s question I need to bring up to you. What did Starbucks mean in 1998?
I mean, it's kind of interesting that's like a focal point thing because
yeah,
it is. I think Starbucks was kind of a newer thing, particularly for the majority of the country. I don't know where it started from, but
Seattle,
that big kind of coffee being a thing and like macchiatos and all that stuff. And they basically have a little speech in the movie, and the Tom Hanks gives a little in one of his letters, a little like Dennis Leary, can't we have coffee flavored coffee kind of diatribe about it. So I think it must have still just been kind of fledgling and new in the public eye.
Yeah. So they got identity through coffee. And yeah, I guess the kind of crux of the movie is he's going to open up this kind of large superstore Barnes and Noble Borders B. Dalton kind of store right across the street basically from her little mom and pop shop or mom shop, even though her mom's dead.
The thing, yeah, it's interesting just because it is like Starbucks was kind of the go-to of like, this is a chain that's ruining things. But I think even like Fight Club came out like the following year, and it has a whole, you know, he has the whole spiel about Planet Starbucks and that. But it's interesting, but it's treated like it's not, though. I mean, which is interesting just because she's, you know, supposed to be this like independent, I'm fighting for the connoisseur and what's real and what's good. And now I'm just going to Starbucks.
Starbucks is probably a chain boutique coffee where it's more like quality is the kind of sous-son of it. While the, you know, the kind of rebellious punk rocky thing is like, yeah, it's all bullshit corporate nonsense.
Well, yeah, I guess it's your Panera Bread in a town full of Subways. It's around this time, kind of early on in the whole proceedings where we're learning about these characters. And this largely doesn't go anywhere, but I'm really glad that it's there. Anything to do with his family. So he too, this mega chain is also a family run thing. His dad, played by Dabney Coleman, is currently in charge of it. And then Dabney Coleman's dad is also still around for whatever reason.
Like Dabney Coleman.
Like, his dad married this super, this much younger woman who, like, flirts with him on occasion. It just sort of makes the world a little bit more lived in, I guess. Because they spend some time with these people, and they're all pieces of shit, too. But I kind of, it's not really central to the plot, as it were, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I like that too. There's a great little bit of business where it's revealed that the little girl, like essentially his niece, is actually his aunt, mm-hmm. and his nephew is actually his brother because of, you know, his father keep marrying so young and whatever.
Yeah, it's just a messed up thing, and just adds a little bit of flavor to the whole thing. Because this really, I mean, because I was thinking about it like that. This is, you know, talk about sort of Panera Bread in a world of Subways. This is kind of like a nicer version of a Hallmark movie.
Oh yeah,
I don't think this works, and I do have all kinds of issues with it. But it's very thoughtfully put together, and it's not just. Like, it's not just treacly nonsense, even though I probably thought so when it came out. But I do think there's actually like care and attention given to this rather than just be like, you know, these two are from the wrong side, you know, opposite ends and they hate each other and now they love each other. Also, it's Christmas. Even though all those things are there, still some verve is put into it.
Yeah. And I think there's some good, you're saying that his family are pieces of shit. I think you're just being glib, but like, I think, as I said, like, Dabney Coleman is kind of a dick. He's not a dick. He's, you know, he keeps marrying younger women and, like, repeating his, like, kind of the same cycle. Mm-hmm. But it's not like he's written, like, some lech. Like, he just seems to be, like, a lonely guy that's just like, yeah, I don't know. I've never really been in love, and I settle for somebody that's comfortable, so I'm not alone, you know?
Right. Well, and it also works, you know, talking about how it doesn't really affect the plot. Like, it does work later on to kind of, I think, add to Tom Hanks. Being yeah. like, I could end up like this. This sucks.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, it's kind of the impetus to kind of get him off his ass.
Dave Chappelle being in this movie is very bizarre.
He's good. Like,
yeah, he's fine. But
if you didn't know he was Dave Chappelle, it's like, oh, yeah, that's just a good young actor.
But it's just, it's funny because this is an extremely white movie.
Well, do you know why he's like, in this?
I read something about how he turned down the chance to play Bubba Gump.
Yeah, because he thought it was going to bomb, and he's like, he was public, like, pretty much every interview is like, oh, I'm a fucking idiot. I can't believe I wasn't in Forrest Gump. I'm the world's biggest idiot. And Tom Hanks, like Dave Chappelle, is like, yeah, I want to work with him. So he's just like, yeah, next movie. It's like, yeah, Chappelle's like, fuck yeah, I want to work with Tom Hanks.
Well, so he's going to open the store. They have a little meet cute in her store where he shows up with his brother and aunt or whatever, who were children, kind of introduces himself. And they already know, it's been established that the neighborhood is going to be worried about this giant conglomerate coming in. And she makes comments about it. And she figures out at a party for New York business people, Parker Posey drags Tom Hanks to. Meg Ryan is there as well with her reporter boyfriend. She figures out who he is. And then they now starts the we hate each other bit.
Yeah. And he's acting an ass at the party.
Yes, he is.
Which... I don't think Tom Hanks was the right casting for this.
I like him in this. I do think like Tom Hanks can play a dick really well, particularly like Volunteers. He's just a huge asshole in that and is just wonderful.
Yeah.
I think I was expecting a much more gentle Tom Hanks, I guess. Like you just expect them to be like, get along and flirt the whole time and not just like be mean to each other. And that's really what you got.
I think the kind of charming that Tom Hanks is, I don't think it's the kind of charming that the character is.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true.
It's just I like Tom Hanks. I can't think of a single movie I don't like Tom Hanks in. I mean, he's delightful. He's a charming man, but he doesn't have the kind of, I don't know how, I think the only way I can word this is like book sexy, you know, like Mr. Darcy almost. I mean, no, that's terrible. I didn't say Mr. Darcy. There, I could have made an argument, but it would take too long, and I don't remember that book well enough. But there's kind of like that kind of intellect. Like, I almost like Greg Kinnear could have played him better.
Yeah, I can see that because he is kind of the idea, I think, with you know, his character being like the smarmy jerk who really manipulates her out of her bookstore and
yeah,
and all this other stuff. And at the end, kind of goes, oh, crap, and starts to sort of change his ways. I mean, I think you want to, I think that they wanted to soft sell it with Tom Hanks a bit to like, well, we can't have him be that much of an asshole, but if he's Tom yeah. Hanks doing it, that kind of softens that blow. But at the same time, he is almost still kind of too nice. But
yeah,
but an argument could be made that that's the reality of it, is that these genuinely sort of like, generally nice people or whatever, or decent, charming people can also just be sociopaths that are only care about business.
Yeah, I mean, that's very true. Yeah, it's just, you know, kind of acting. It's rare for a Tom Hanks thing. Because also, like, I mean, I think this works great. I'm not really, like, complaining. It's just, when on a list of things I was thinking going into this movie, because I saw it when it came out, so I barely remember the fucking thing. But I wasn't thinking, oh, Tom Hanks not having the right kind of charisma that would be, you know, 150th on the list of, but there's a couple scenes where it's like when he's being charming with his, you know, ostensibly niece and nephew, you know, whatever. It just, he's being like, he's being fun uncle charming instead of being sexy dad charming, you know, like he should have been. And I think Greg Kinnear or somebody like that would be sexy dad charming. And I think that's the kind of energy that would have worked a little bit better. I mean, it's fine. There's scenes in it where like, oh, this is weird. I just kind of wish this was someone else a little bit.
Yeah.
Like there's some parts like, all right, so here's a great example, and it's coming up somewhat soon, but when he salesmans his way through getting her the credit card sale and when she's online it's that Tom Hanks doesn't pull that off at all. Like he doesn't have the energy for that scene. It doesn't work. Like that's not the kind of guy that would pull that move off. And it, I mean, it works fine, I guess, but like, yeah, I couldn't help but imagining a more suave actor in that spot.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of felt this is one of the moments in the movie where I felt like this whole movie is really for people that would enjoy New Yorker cartoons. Like that scene, so she's trying to avoid him because they're at the same grocery store, and in doing so, she ends up getting into the cash only line. And when she gets up there, oh, all she's got is a card, and everyone behind her is like, "Boo, you suck! Keep it moving." And Tom Hanks comes over, quote unquote, charms the cashier by asking her name, and then is like, "Well, I see you have a credit card machine here. Maybe you could just zip this through, you know, zip zip." And it's awful. And it made me think of like, that's what these people think is being charming. And I hate them.
And I
felt so bad for the cashier. I don't think you were supposed to.
And I think a more traditionally chiseled jawline, handsome fella, sleaze style could have pulled that off better. Because at least you can do the like, you know, hubba hubba. This guy's saying my name and saying it in a sexy way. But like Tom Hanks is like, you know, you want him to take you for a milkshake.
It seems like it'd be easy to tell Tom Hanks no in certain situations. Be like, no, I don't think so, pal.
Yeah, I don't think Tom Hanks could talk me into fuck all. He could ask me politely to something and it'd be like, yeah, probably, you know, like if he said pretty please, I'd be like, yeah, you know what? You sold me with that hound dog look of yours.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't hold it against him for asking. But yeah, no, it's not happening.
Also, the other thing on the same kind of energy that Tom Hanks is doing, and I know Tom Hanks is a real person, is into The Godfather. I read this in the trivia, but in this movie, he seems like the least Godfather-y person humanly available.
That's how you know it's true, because the code of silence, omerta. I have no idea where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I liked it though. so yeah, cool. Cone of silence. Yeah, forget about it.
Yeah, that was one of the bits, kind of like the Dennis Leary bit jammed in there, and the weird aside about the name Kimberly.
Yeah, that was
felt
weird.
Felt like bizarre letters to the editors, like kind of jammed in there. Just like I'm working on my tight five at the Comedy Store.
I also wonder if maybe in 1998 that made a little bit more sense.
Quite possibly. It's something that felt, it didn't feel as natural. I mean, the Godfather thing, you know, they worked it into a conversation and it was fine. But the whole, just like the montage of him like doing the bits or whatever was a little much. Which, this is a movie that, it got me thinking about the way that we present emails and text communications in movies and stuff now, because that's so much of our daily lives and how we communicate that. And I don't know if it was Sherlock that started this, where you would see the text show up on the screen that people got like being like a voiceover or a shot of it. And I always like that, but I think for this kind of thing, the sort of exchanging of letters, I think that voiceover works a lot better than just seeing the text happen.
And absolutely.
I know that wasn't even really like an option to do it the same way. They probably could have, you know, showed it and had just like a close up of them going, but I think, you know, them reacting to it and with the voiceover made it so much warmer and personable.
And they played with it a few times, which I liked, where, like one of them, they'll be speaking aloud while typing. So their voiceover will be kind of talking over themselves, saying the words, which it's, you know, that's a good bit of movie making right there. That really brings something interesting to what is otherwise, you know, an info dump or, you know, an emotion dump or whatever.
Right. Well, and also I think it doubles up as you have what ostensibly at the time is still like a new technology. And there's even a conversation at the you know, beginning where Greg Kinnear is like, oh, this stuff's terrible. It's going to, you know, ruin everything. We're like, this is still kind of new.
I mean, he was
like,
right.
Well, yeah, yes, absolutely. Other than his obsession with typewriters, I'm okay with the guy. But like, so it does kind of humanize this whole new weird thing. So like, even if you're like, I don't know, email is for the young people. You can still go like, but I recognize a letter when I hear it.
Yeah, it's too hard to remember, like, to place it where, like, what the technology was at the time, what people thought about it. But I feel like this was still like this. It was still so unknown that there wasn't even, like, jokes enough about it in 98.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it hadn't reached that kind of, like, cultural saturation point.
Talking about this, how you represent the stuff, there's a great series on Hulu called Pen 15, and it's about two young girls, like, in middle school in the early 2000s, and it's written and performed by these two actresses who play that, like, at their age, play themselves at that age. And there's a whole through line in the second season where, or there's no, sorry, it's towards the end of the first season, where one of them has a online boyfriend that she only knows through AOL. So it's the same kind of thing as this.
Yeah.
And who's revealed to be, but like the way they handle it is something I hadn't seen before, but like those weird away messages that, like, particularly teen, you know, as a teen you would do that were all like super vague and like really meaningful or something. Like one guy's was like a Korn lyric or something. Like,
that's awesome.
Yeah, Fred Durst or something, but you're like, oh man, that really hurts that he posted that.
Yeah.
And I thought about this, like, when they're fighting or whatever, there's none of that. They just like talk it through. And I think that's one of the comforting things of this movie is that it cuts through all that bullshit of what, you know, people might do. Even though like he stands her up all this terrible stuff. They're just like, okay, well, we're just going to talk about it. And it's still very nice.
Yeah. It's nice. It's nice that this movie has adults in it, which, I mean, we said this on the show a few times when we watch like actual grown up movies, but it's nice to see adults doing adult things.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, this is me talking. So like, I'm a fucking Marvel fanboy, but like, it's just nice to hear adults say stuff and not, you know, bullshit about like, go, go, go. Like there's no blue space laser, no man child. There's no Rick or Morty in this. Like, right. It's just, well,
it's also like, I don't know. It's people having emotions and not describing them to you. Or like making it sound like they're in a therapy session, which is a thing now. It's rather than Tom Hanks go like, well, I saw what my dad became and I didn't want that for me. He just does it. Yeah. You know?
I was just gonna say, we should talk about, the getting stood up part. Cause I think that's the weakest part of the film. So he really, you know, he's going to meet her at the place and it's been this thing building up through the whole film. So they've been building to them, you know, going to meet, and he sends Chappelle to look through the window. And there's a delightful Tom Hanks being nervous part, which is where I like Tom Hanks, because I think this is kind of his wheelhouse, is acting kind of like kid-like and nervous. And he makes Chappelle look through the window and Chappelle's fucking with him. And then he's like, well, if you don't like girls that look like Kathleen, whatever, you are not going to like this. And it turns out it's her and it's great. But getting stood up there is just a weird... So, okay, I get him not going in because he's like, oh, shit, this is that lady I don't like. But him going in and, like, fucking with her was, I don't know, that something Sith. Yeah, it's a weird choice. And I don't know that I like it as a character, as part of that character.
Well, that's part of what my whole thing with this is that he and I suppose that this could be already true about a lot of romantic comedy kind of things. But like, he's manipulative and weird. Like, he uses this information kind of against her. And it doesn't seem... I think they want to try to play it off as like, well, but he doesn't really know. He's unsure, too. But it seems like he's a piece of shit. Like, he goes in and kind of antagonizes her.
He does.
And, it's gross.
And we're skipping ahead here, because, I mean, whatever. I mean, it's they write back and forth, they fight. Yeah. But when he introduces himself into her life as a friend, he writes to her in the guise of New York 152 or whatever the hell the name is.
Mm-hmm.
And then hangs out with her as Joe Fox, where he plays off shit that New York 152 says to make him look better. Mm-hmm. Like he's negging her from one side. It's manipulative. Yeah, it's just manipulative and kind of gross. And
it didn't feel good.
Yeah, and I don't like that it worked as well as it did.
Well, I think I think some of that is because of Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan.
Yeah.
They do have a fantastic chemistry, and I understand why you just want to put them in more and more movies. Because they're great, but yeah, it does kind of cover up it sort of slathers over a really sort of deep crack in this whole thing.
Yeah, see, I would have liked it a little bit more, which I think that's what, I haven't seen the other versions of this, but if they played it off more as like he's confused and doesn't know what the fuck he's doing, so he's kind of being a coward about it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like kind of panicking and doing this. Kind of Three's Company style. He's like, oh, fuck, I'm going to be both these people and I don't know what to do and I'm freaking out and I'm too much of a coward to talk to her. If they played it that way, it's less malevolent. It's less bad. There's less like predatory behavior to it.
Well,
but
I think
the way it is now, it's gross.
Well, I think you also have
it's not gross. It's
because a little sort of subplot or part of this whole thing is that they have an exchange where she's like, I can't, if I'm in a situation where I can't, you know, I want to say something terrible to a person and I can't, I'm just too nice and it's terrible. And he's like, well, I have the opposite problem, whereas I'm just a jerk to people. I can't help myself. I guess it's supposed to be about him learning because she ends up getting the power to speak her own mind or getting the confidence to do so. And he, I guess, learns to not be a jerk. But at the same time, it kind of washes him clean of any responsibility for that, where it's like, hey, I can't help it. Like, it's just forces beyond my control make me a jerk. I can't help it. And that's pretty weak. And I think some of that is like, yeah, well, I'm just going to go and antagonize her just. Because it's obvious that these people like each other, like their back and forth is nice and charming. But
so it's the other kind of major stuff. The other kind of major thing we skipped is so because the Fox and Sons opens, her store starts to lose business, and because she's learned how to be proactive via her relationship online. She goes to the mattress, as they say, from The Godfather. And her boyfriend, writer, puts up a piece in the Post about her being the little guy that's being steamrolled by, you know, Big Book. And she gets to talk on TV, and it's this big media blitz, and it still doesn't work. And it turns out that they're going to have to shut down the shop. And boy, did that get me. That made me so fucking sad to see that old little, like that quaint little kid bookshop getting all shut down and them slowly unpacking it and her closing it. It's like, oh, that hurts my soul. I'm like a fucking, as a writer, as a reader, as a lonely boy that doesn't like when things end. Like, oh boy, that got me. That got me good.
And it was also interesting just how that was done. Like when they're kind of having their goodbye sale or whatever, and the woman is telling her how important it was, how she came in. The camera's never—you'd never see who the woman talking. It's just on Meg Ryan's reaction to it, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, this old lady goes up and she's like, "I remember being in here with your mother, and she got me my first copy of Anne of Green Gables," and it's like, "Oh, my fucking heart, my heart."
Yeah.
Oh God, that was fucking brutal. This movie hit me on a lot of levels. Yeah, so this is kind of the character at her lowest, and this is where Tom Hanks swoops in and starts manipulating her, being, you know, nice as Joe Fox.
Even more, but like it's almost worse at this point because he feels bad about it, but he doesn't fess up to any of it yet. Like he, and there's a point like not too far after this where she starts to have an inkling that maybe this is the case, but he goes to just be her friend. And granted, to be fair, like none of what he does in the email stuff has to do with their business issues. I mean, cause it is just like, yeah, we're a giant bookstore or whatever, but it's still just like disingenuous and crummy. And then when he really starts capitalizing on it, really doing the, as you were talking about earlier, the, like, because she is talking to him about New York 152 or whatever, and he's like, yeah, that guy, what is this about? Then it starts to feel really gross. If it started out that way, where, like, he, you know, he doesn't want to admit that he's this guy, and ruin the friendship or something, you know, whatever. But because he's been lying to her this much, it feels worse.
Yeah. And then when he's making fun of there's a nice sequence in here that, although it's part of manipulation, and I think this is where Tom Hanks works, is they're delightful, where he's pitching what 152 must mean. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, he's probably some giant fat guy. Forgive the fat phobia. It's, you know, 1998. That was acceptable back then. And as a hefto myself, I'm allowed to do it. So, but he's making fat jokes and he's like, well, maybe he's had 152 moles removed. And he's got 152 scar marks. He's had 152 arrest warrants. And she's like, well, he's got 102 ways into my heart. And he's got 102 mm-hmm. blah, blah. Like, and it's just, it's so cute and lovely. And they both play the longing on their face so well. And I'm so, so, so alone. Right, and I had to pause the movie because I'm like, this guy made her fall in love with him twice over email and in real life. And I used to have an email relationship and that fell apart and I'm so alone. And then if I say this on the show, people are going to like, yeah, man, this quarantine's rough. Fuck your quarantine. I've been alone for fucking years. Don't take this away from me. All I have is alone. You can't have alone. But everybody's like, oh, I'm so alone because of the quarantine. Fuck you. I've been alone for years. Someone help me. So anyway.
Yeah, quarantine's tough, dude. I get it.
That year not having people around. Oh, that must be rough. Having your bubble and only your bubble to talk to. Having that bubble sure must be rough. Yeah. Having someone in your bubble. So I want a bubble. Why can't I have 152 mole joke with a pretty lady?
You could rent Boy as a Boy in the Bubble with Jake Gyllenhaal. That's just as good, right?
Yeah, that's true.
There we go.
He did play Mysterio in the last Spider-Man. I like Spider-Man. Spider-Man, yeah, he fills he's that hole friend. In my heart.
Marvel
he
does whatever
he does whatever a spider can, and the only thing he can't do is find me love. Because yeah. he had Mary Jane, he had Gwen Stacy until she mm-hmm. died after that evil doc. All right, so I'm literally I was joking, but I actually was making myself upset there
about Gwen Stacy.
Why did she die? She fell so hard, and then he got tricked into thinking he killed her by trying to stop her with his webbing, yeah. which he shoots from his hand, as known from the famous song. Yep. So there's a lot of emotional manipulation that's happening here, and then eventually, I really like the way that this ends up. Is he gives a speech, and this is where I kind of forgive some of the manipulation, and not forgive, but I kind of write it off more towards incompetence less than manipulation, is where he goes, you know, if I wasn't Joe Fox and you weren't, you know, shop around the corner girl, if I met you, I would try to get your number. And it's a really sweet scene. And Meg Ryan, I think, does the best acting I've ever seen from a human being, where she can't figure out where to put her hands when he talks about how he wants to give her a number. Is go back, if anybody's listening and hasn't watched this, I think it's free somewhere. I paid for it at Amazon because I didn't feel like opening another app. But watch her hand acting. It is so nervous and perfect, and she doesn't know. You can actually see a beat where she almost grabs her own tit. And I don't mean this as a joke. I mean this in a protective, like, you know, like if you know body language, you cross your arms across your chest, like if you're like poker, when you cross your arms, you're trying to protect yourself. You see her doing it, but also she's trying to be open because it is a fucking masterclass of being awkward. And it's go and watch that little bit. It's so good.
Yeah. It's tough because I know you can't make the entire movie out of this, but that whole last 20 minutes of them.
Yeah.
I enjoyed so much more compared to them just like sniping at each other.
Yeah.
For most of it.
Well, that's when I think the sniping stuff doesn't work because it's Tom Hanks. And I think this goes back to that, like, if it was like a Gene Kelly or like more suave, because this goes back to that, like Hepburn and Clark Gable. Is that who was screwball comedies?
Cary Grant.
Cary Grant. Yeah, I get them all confused. I don't know.
In the original Hollywood so well. It was Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, or even a Jimmy Stewart. Yeah, that's actually that's a great vibe. Like Jimmy Stewart would be, you know, if somehow he was alive in 98 and age appropriate, he would have been perfect.
And hot.
Yeah, damn straight. Him on those roller skates. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't work later, but this is where the Tom Hanks-ness works really well, is that scene. And so she's like, I can't do this right now, basically. I have to go meet my, you know, NYC 152. And I think the way they played this out was pitch perfect. Because it's so hard to introduce. I mean, you can see it coming, but it's not a fucking mystery. But like, it's so hard to introduce this of her waiting, being nervous he's not going to show up. It's how do you get Tom Hanks to her and have the reveal when it's in an open air area? And using the dog as the ersatz, you know, as the way to do it. So you hear him screaming Berkeley or whatever the fuck the dog's name is, Brinkley, where she's like, oh, shit, that's the dog's name. And then sees him round the tree. Oh, it's such a good reveal. Like, it's a really perfect thing. And then again, Meg Ryan knocking it out of the park where she, her delivery of, I wanted it to be you. I wanted it to be you so badly. Was fucking chills. That was such a good line reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting that like the way that this is structured, where so much of this stuff happens at the end. Like the majority of the movie is them angry at each other and hating each other. I know that's, you know, that's not uncommon for a romantic comedy thing, but it seems like the actual like when the real love affair matches the online one is really in that last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And I like that. I do think the manipulation stuff is gross or whatever, but I do like the way that was kind of, cause we already know these characters and we've seen their failure, you know, her failure and dismay and all stuff. And we've grown close to them. And then to watch, you're kind of invested in like, oh, but now they love each other rather than just be like the entire time is kind of a will they or won't they?
Yeah.
I like that idea, but, as I said, though, I still kind of all the gross manipulation kind of lessened that at the same time.
I'm on the same page as you, but the way it resolves it, because of that last 20 minutes, I can kind of put on some romance goggles and write it off as Tom Hanks as incompetent, less than him being manipulative. I mean, albeit he was being manipulative, but it's almost I want to couch it as a incompetence, not a premeditated thing.
Right. A cruel indifference rather than.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because he learned from like the way his father acted and the way his grandfather. So it's like him, you know, just kind of perpetrating the cycle of not really under. And then, you know, him finally kind of, you know, opening up at the end. Yeah. But boy, that last 20 minutes was beautiful. Like it's so worth watching this movie for that. It's not like I didn't like the other stuff, but like, yeah, man, this movie, you know. All right. How many times did I cry watching it, John?
Four.
No, zero.
Well, that's not what I heard.
Jesus, I'm kidding. I got misty twice, and then I'm not going to say a full tear came out, but at the end when she said so badly on a writing level, that broke my heart of just like, oh, that's such good wording. Like, because I'm just going to get nerdy for a second here. I mean, and I'm saying that like not in a Thanos way. I mean, actually nerdy is that could have been an infinitive. A lot of people would have said, I so badly wanted it to be you is the other way that sentence would have been worded. And I think a lot of people would word it that way because it puts the intensifier towards the beginning of the sentence, making it punch early, which I think is absolutely wrong for this. So her saying it, especially after repeating the phrase, because you also don't want to repeat stuff generally because it makes the writing sound awkward. And this is such a good use of repetition of, I wanted it to be you. I wanted it to be you so badly. That so badly put at the end is such good writing. It's so small, but it's just something I caught of like, as if I'm editing something and I pick up on myself doing it, I'm like, hey, if I move at the end, it's going to have a lot more punch. I'm so proud of myself that hearing it delivered, I'm like, great to leave, but also well done putting that at the end instead of at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. When, I mean, I think most people would have just written like, boy, oing, I'm horny.
Oh yeah. No, totally. Yeah. Well, in the other, you know, they actually have outtakes and Tom Hanks goes, Berkeley. And then she runs up and goes, you're in a one-way trip to fucktown.
Yep.
Which I thought was good. And then Tom Hanks is like, you're going to take the one train, you know, my dick.
Mm-hmm. Then it becomes the end of Eyes Wide Shut.
Yes. Yes. It turns out. Yeah. Yeah. Berkeley's real name is Fidelio. Right. I remembered it this time. let's just every episode reference Fidelio from now on.
Let's do it. They'll let us in sometime.
Yes. So, That was yeah, you've got mail. The only other comment I have on it, and it's a small one, it'll probably get cut, but I somewhat wanted to see the old switcheroo with the couples. Cause I think Greg Kinnear actually would have worked really well with Tom Hanks' girlfriend.
Oh, with Parker Posey?
With Parker Posey. I don't know. I feel
that
like
would have felt a little too neat, I think, but I hope him and the news lady are very happy.
Yeah. Or maybe like if they made like a shitty sequel where Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan aren't in it. Like I just want to see Greg Kinnear and Parker Posey kind of interact as those characters.
Yeah. I don't know. Like they use ICQ or something.
Yeah. Well, no. I more mean like he's just so up his own ass and she's up her own ass. So they're just in a room together talking to themselves, but they're together. Like, I don't know. There's just something also very New York about that.
Yeah. I don't think she'd tolerate the typewriters. I think she would not have that at all, but maybe that'd be a fun thing.
Yeah. No, it's a little early for those to be hipster chic. So yeah, you're right. Yeah. You bring a good point. I thought this was delightful. If you are, as my old screen name was Lonely Boy 16. Oh wait, no, I'm kidding. I actually used to have friends and relationships, 25 years ago.
It's a great
I'm Man, okay. I'm okay. Everything's fine.
Quarantine's tough. I get it.
Yeah. This last year must have been really hard for that whole fucking year. Oh no. You should watch this movie, everybody. It's good. Report back to me.
Yeah, as romantic comedies go, you can rarely miss with Nora Ephron. She's great at that stuff. Also, I learned during this. I think I'd heard it before, but she was married to Nicholas Pileggi, that wrote Goodfellas and Casino. Yeah, and Carl Bernstein from Woodward and Bernstein. Not at the same time, obviously, but
I don't know. I'm not gonna poly shame.
Yeah. But she will. This is why she's not married at the same time.
Fair point.
But anyway, there you go. You've got mail.
here's the weekly recommend stuff song. I'm too lonely to make a joke. Oh, please help me. Oh, God, I'm dying inside. Oh, so here's something I liked. I don't know what to
work. This quarantine's rough, man.
Seriously, every time someone says that to me, like, I'm kind of kidding, but it's like, it fucking infuriates me. This is some nerdy ass shit. I am reading Thrawn.
Oh, God. By
Timothy Zahn.
Yeah.
Not the ones from the 90s.
Oh, there's other ones?
Yes, there's canon. So you're thinking of the Thrawn trilogy with Heir to the Empire and that shit.
I always am.
Yes. No, Luke isn't in this. This is the story of Thrawn and how he enters the Empire and stuff. This was written in like 2017-ish. So I'm on the second book right now. And it is fun. I shouldn't say read. I'm listening to the audiobook, but people say read, so it's fine. But the guy doing it does the Thrawn from the cartoon, slow, measured voice, kind of with that kind of deeper kind of dude vibrato. Mm-hmm. And oh man, it is fun to listen to. And I like Thrawn as a character. It's just methodical, and a lot of it's from his perspective. So it's like how he studies a room and stuff. It's super interesting. But it's not, if you're looking like, hey, I'm looking for a great book to read, don't read fucking Thrawn. But I mean, let's just wait our thing here.
Pride and Prejudice and Thrawn.
Yeah. Let's. If you're like, oh, I want some great literature, no, don't pick up Timothy Zahn's Thrawn. But if you want some fun, just silly, Star Wars universe stuff, it's well worth a go.
Nice. I did not know that he wrote more of them.
Do you have any recommendations?
Recently, we lost Hal Holbrook and Christopher Plummer, two fantastic actors. And so I revisited some of their work. And I highly recommend Rituals, which is also known as The Creeper. It's a Canadian horror film with Hal Holbrook and a group of doctors go on this camping trip and they get kind of terrorized. It's a little bit like Deliverance, but I think it's I like it. I think I like it better than Deliverance, honestly. And Hal Holbrook is amazing in it. He's really, really good. And then I rewatched Michael Mann's The Insider, where Christopher Plummer plays Mike Wallace. And man, that movie is great. Like, Russell Crowe is really good in it. Al Pacino is like just the right level of late stage Al Pacino. and just the cinematography is great. And Christopher Plummer is just fantastic. His role is limited, but he's, man, he's good. And I'd also throw in there on the Christopher Plummer tip, the Silent Partner with Elliot Gould. Christopher Plummer is an absolute psychopath in that, and it's a great movie. Also, very young John Candy is in it.
For Christopher Plummer, I recommend Knives Out, because I can't think of another movie other than Gone with the Wind that he's in. And what's it called?
Sound of Music. Music.
And I've never seen that movie. So Knives Out, Christopher Plummer, he's great.
Oh, you should watch the Silent Partner. It's really good. It's a short little noir, like not even a noir, but kind of, I don't know, but it's a little crime movie.
So John, for next episode, I was thinking that we watch a movie that I know almost nothing about. So you tell the audience.
It's something I'm very excited to watch. I was a big fan of this movie when it came out. Uncut Gems.
The Steven Universe spinoff, Uncut Gems.
If you like the warm cuddlies that you get from Steven Universe, you will love Uncut Gems.
And I guarantee there'll be more Jewish jokes than Marjorie Taylor Greene's bat mitzvah. I don't know.
Her email signature.
I literally don't even know if that's her name.
No, that is absolutely correct. That is.
I got all three names right. I knew it was MTG. It was the. I'm just kind of guessing.
But it's a. This should be fun. I saw this in the theater, and I really enjoyed it. And I don't want to spoil whether or not the gems get cut. But I think you're in for a wild ride.
I can't wait for the inevitable Rob Schneider run in.
Uh huh.
You can do it.
The rapid grandma.
You can cut those gems.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna be good.
I got these gems. They need to get cut. You can cut them. Oh no, it's a fun. Oh no, one cut gems are better.
Yeah, the two guys that are only in Adam Sandler movies will show back up. They're great.
Anyway, we'll see you next time.
Yep, like, subscribe, all that stuff. Contact us on Twitter at JahsPod, JAHS Pod. Say hi. Tell us what to watch. Tell us anything at all.
Yes, please.
We're available.
Yeah, please. I mean, and I'm totally not like desperate for conversation or talking, and like no, like, and 100% don't thirst trap my DMs. Like that, there's like, if you're like a lonely lady and like, you know, just don't like, definitely not at the Alex Cast, my personal address that John can't check. Like, don't, certainly don't send me stuff. I mean, that would be really bad. Like, don't just imagine that I'm crying and just really, really need to talk. Because yeah,
quarantine's rough.
Yeah, yeah. Gonna kill everybody. Okay.
Goodbye.